Hello, my name is Debbie Boone, and I want to welcome you to my podcast, The Bend, where we explore how successful people navigated the path and emerged in a better place when life threw them an unexpected twist. It's inspired by one of my favorite sayings, "The bend in the road is not the end of the road unless you fail to make the curve." These conversations will hopefully help you and inspire you to embrace your personal bend and to flourish. I hope you enjoy it, and if you need help with your own personal navigation and you're in veterinary medicine, please feel free to reach out to me at Debbie Boone, Two Managed Vets Consulting. Enjoy the bend and be inspired by our wonderful guest. Welcome. All right. Welcome, everyone, to this episode of The Bend. So today, I'm pretty psyched about having my friend Becky Moser on because Becky has done some really cool things in the world of veterinary technicians. I'm not going to do her whole bio because we're going to put that in the show notes, but she is an RVT. She's done some sea turtle rescue because her picture when she comes up is this really cool picture of her and a turtle. So we have sea turtle fondness in common. She is the co-host of Dr. Ernie Ward's podcast, which I've actually been on. And she has done a really cool thing in starting the Veterinary Giving Tree. So we're going to touch about that too. So hey, Becky.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me. I'm honored.
You're welcome. I'm so glad we finally could get our schedules together. She's a busy girl. And so. But let's talk a little bit about how you got started in vet med. Why vet med?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. My whole life growing up, my grandfather used to tell me I would be a veterinarian or a farmer. So I don't think he really knew what a veterinary technician was back then. But I think it was just in me as a kid. And, you know, we just have a special love and interest for animals, but also I think science and medicine. I mean, this isn't really just about loving animals. It's not enough. And you saw that in me. So it was always a seed. And, but honestly, I grew up kind of afraid of the profession, knowing that there's a lot of really hard stuff we have to do. I didn't know if I was brave enough really to do this. So it was in my mid-20s before I finally bit the bullet and said, I want to go to tech school and follow through with what feels like the right place for me.
Yeah, I was one of those kids who always wanted to be a veterinarian. And then after 4 years of undergrad, I went, screw this. I'm done. I don't want to go to school anymore. But it worked. Yeah. But like you, like, I love the science of it. It's not just the animals. It's the science jazzes me too. And the people part is fun for me. You know, I like the people part too. So let's talk a little bit about curveballs, because that's what the bend is all about. So you're going along doing your technician thing. When did life throw you a curveball?
I think it was like, I read that, you know, the question and I thought, when did life not throw me a curveball? You know, but to be really honest and really personal, midway through technician school, I had been married for 10 months to my high school sweetheart. We had been together for about 8 years. You know, through things that we don't have to dive into on this show, we ended up abruptly getting divorced. And I just thought like, oh, I'm going to go to tech school and then I'm going to go work at NC State and I'm going to retire. And like, I had it all planned. And that was a big fat curveball because all of a sudden I didn't have a bank account, a place to live, anything in my name. I mean, truly went to zero. But what I did have was my education. And what empowered me to leave a situation that I needed to leave was knowing that I was getting my education and that I was going to be able to take care of myself and to do better for myself. And I had worked so hard for my education that kind of the shenanigans that I was living through was not going to be good enough for me at that time. And so because of that, I really lean heavily into what education empowers and does for people, because I really truly think it's how I survived my curveball.
Wow. Yeah. You know, you made such a really good point there about all of a sudden you have nothing. You're like, you've kind of depended on this person to have your bank account and stuff. And so I think that's really an important point for women. Be your own person, have your own identity, have your own credit cards, be able to weather a storm without your partner, because, you know, one day they might leave or one day they might die. And it's you. It leaves you.
That's exactly it. It could be divorce, but it could be death. And I've seen that happen to people in my life over the last few years, where it's sudden and awful. And all of a sudden you're like, you know, I don't know the bank account information. I don't know passwords. But even more so, yeah, I had no credit at all, let alone any credit cards. And you know, and you're a student, you know. So yeah, it was really a wake up call. And so you're absolutely right. It is for women, for everyone. Mm-hmm. Continue to be your own person. Yeah. And to be able to take care of yourself is very empowering. And boy, that's a rug that gets yanked out from under you. But yeah. You know, you get
yeah.
back up and look at me now.
There you go. That's it. Well, you know, financial literacy, I think, is greatly diminished in our world. And it's when I was young, and I'm certainly a lot older than you are, but they made us learn stuff in school. Like, we had to learn how to balance a checkbook and budget your household and yeah. you know, sew on a button. I mean, simple things like that. And they don't teach yeah. anymore because the curriculum is so focused on computer stuff. But yeah. you got to learn, you got to know how to live, right? Just live. Day to day,
yeah,
and do that well first, and then you can do.
Oh yeah, I think yeah. about all the things I didn't know how to do for. Like, I didn't know how to start a lawnmower, you know. Yeah. So it was like, let alone I did it. I had no idea. Luckily, it was amicable enough. I did make a few phone calls to my ex-husband to learn a few things, and my dad got a lot of phone calls. But I'll tell you what, standing on your own feet feels good. It feels so good. Yeah. And while it was a hard thing to live through, it was an amazing thing to come out on the other side of and to say, I came out a whole new person and a much better person. So, you know, if that resonates with you, yeah, exactly. you know, we're here for it.
You know, I think sometimes those curveballs, you know, right. I mean, we were laughing because my mom has just got out of the hospital and she's like, oh, I'm so tired of being tired because she has pneumonia. And I said, there's times in your life that you do wish your life away. I was talking to a second year vet student last night and she said, oh man, if I can get through this semester. I went, yeah, you don't want to wish your life away, but there's times that you go, geez, please, can this hurry up and get over with? Do we get to the other
yes.
side?
Yeah.
The good thing is there is another side. You know, you get through it.
There absolutely isn't. I can't think back to, I can only think back to some of the worst moments when I felt the most helpless and look back at those moments and think about, wow, they were really launching points.
Yeah.
You know, they really were points I launched from and did. And, you know, I think, I can't remember who I can attribute this to, but I had a conversation with someone and we just kind of said, you know, it's like when life gets a little bit harder, you're just leveling up. It's like a video game, you know. Mm-hmm. Video games get harder every time you are mastering a level.
Yeah.
So when it feels like you're getting kicked, you know, it might just actually be you leveled up and you're doing better. And there's just a new challenge.
Yeah, I love that. Well,
yeah.
Honestly, and we do know that the more challenges you go through in life, actually, the better you get at resilience and being able to 100%. Weather the storms. You know, so I look at like this pandemic and. I was a young child in the 60s. So I looked like this was like deja vu. We had gone through civil unrest. We had gone through a pandemic. We didn't close the world down. We had Woodstock in the middle of our pandemic.
So we all coped differently.
We did a little different thing, but there was no social media. So we didn't even know we were supposed to be afraid. We just were doing stuff. But yeah, it was very much like I'd already kind of lived through this time before. And, you know, multiple other things like recessions and gas shortages and, you know, the spike in inflation. I mean, during Carter's years, there was a 22% inflation rate. So, yeah, hey, yeah. I've been there, done that. And, you know, I'm still yeah. here, still standing,
yeah.
still eating, still obviously eating and just living fine. So we get through, you know, humans yeah. are built to survive. And sometimes I think we take life a little too seriously. And don't realize that we just need to keep moving one foot in front of the other, right?
That's it. Well, and I believe so much in like the universe and natural balance. And so I think that if we don't find it for ourselves, you know, the universe finds it for us. And I, the pandemic is a terrifying time. And I think it peeled back a lot of layers. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, we got a lot of things we needed in that time. I think, yeah. I think a lot of people came out better people. Mm-hmm. I think people are doing better for themselves. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of good that will have come out of that time universally. So, yeah. You know, there's natural balance.
I agree the good with that. Yeah. Well, yeah. And I love history. And then when you look back over many historical times, there's always a time. There's the earth cycles through and it kind of purges some people because it gets a little crowded. And then yeah. things change. Yeah. There's always a great disruption. And then the disruption yes. kind of plays out and things get better. So the good news is things get better every time. Right. If we look back, you know, over everything from the American Revolution forward, things get better every time. And that's yeah. what we have to look forward to. So yeah, I mean, that's just it. Thinking about rate of pay for the technical team and I mean, that obviously has put technicians in the driver's seat here when it comes to pay, which I'm like, yay, you know, it's good.
Times they are changing, right?
Yeah.
It's getting, you know, I think, again, we learned we don't maybe have to work or we could make it or we could this. Our priorities changed so mm-hmm. much in through the pandemic. And this has just become, you know, a time I heard the term she session used by Wilma, the amazing veterinary industry group, was talking about, you know, a lot of women. I think they said 1 in 3 women left the industry to go take care of families, their industry, not necessarily this one. Mm-hmm. And I think that happened with us a lot. And I'll tell you, and I know you see this too, is like you look at these vet tech websites and they'll be posting, oh, I'll tell you what, we're getting a Buc-ee's in North Carolina. Did you know this?
No.
We're getting a Buc-ee's. If you don't know what a Buc-ee's is, you got to go where they have them. I think they have them in like the Midwest. I think they're like a Midwestern thing. Do you know what they are?
Do you
travel enough?
Yeah.
Oh my God. They're these huge, like beaver themed truck stops.
Oh, I know who it is. Oh, I know. Yeah. I know. Yeah. They're out of town.
There's like a full on gift shop and like a barbecue joint. And yes. like, I mean, literally this thing is like a whole, it's the most amazing. You can get your beaver nuggets. You can get your beaver pajamas. You can get some housewarming. If you've got a wedding shower to go to, you are set at Buc-ee's. Okay.
Yeah.
We're getting one here in North Carolina. The sign, there's a, you know, they're hiring. And so there's a billboard and it's like $18 to $22 an hour. You know, and I could go work at Buc-ee's,
right?
You know, and serve barbecue and check out people with their beaver nuggets all day for way more than most of our technicians are making. And we're seeing this time and time again, right? Gas stations are hiring, Starbucks are hiring, all of these places are hiring, and they're doing so way outside of what most of our techs are making. In fact, double. You and I know for some of our more rural technicians and assistants. So it's becoming a time where the carrot is very large and it's dangling in places that are less stressful, more structured, have better benefits. And so I think there's a lot of hand washing happening or a demand and a boundary for not only financial, but emotional demand for what their workplace is going to hold for them.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I've had people who would leave my practice and, you know, they'd go make 50 cents an hour somewhere down the road. And then they turn around and come back and go, I don't want to work. Those people are mean. Can I come back?
50 cents is nothing
So yeah. And I would say, sure, you can come back once, but you know, you can't keep just doing this because it's not fair. So yeah, you can come back once, but the grass is not always greener, but having a culture that people enjoy and actually can look forward to walking in the door every day.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we can't afford what some corporate groups are, even if you're a small business person. And I think a lot of times veterinarians, I had this discussion this morning with a veterinary manager, they're charging $10 a day less than a regular boarding kennel to board pets in a medical facility. I went, that's craziness. You are the one who thinks you can't, because pets who want medical care, who want experienced licensed technicians looking after their old, sick, geriatric pets, are willing to pay to have them looked after, and rather than have some high school kid that, you know, the kennel boarding powdered off the street. Is it so?
That's it.
It's about value. It's about the worth. And for the people who don't want that, that's fine. They can go somewhere cheap, but you make it worth it for you. And I think that's what the technicians are seeing now is, you know, you have all this education, you have these skills, And I'm telling you, my mother spent 4 days in the hospital. So I got to look at human nursing. We are so much more efficient. And these girls were great. I mean, they really did a good job. But I mean, I said, if we had ordered an ultrasound on a cardiac patient and we didn't perform it for 2 days until like an hour before they were going to walk out the door, I mean, our clients would have had a fit. But that was what happened in the hospital. And then wait to two hours for water. They give you medication to take and bring you water 2 hours later. Oh, it, no dog would have been left with an empty bowl in our facility. This is not how
You know, and it's funny because it goes back to what you said about financial management, because I think the disadvantage that a lot of people I know and technicians I see or counsel or consulting that I do, if you don't know what you need, and we just talked about this on the podcast too, if you don't know what you need to make an hour, if you don't know what your finances are and look like, then you aren't going to know that 50 cents is going to seem like enough money and good money for you enough to not be as concerned with the culture. If you don't have a good hold on what you need to be making, I think we get ourselves into this kind of our own mess about this with, I went on this interview and it was only this much an hour. And then it's like, and that's part of your bargaining tools. If you don't know, then that's where we get into these silly 25, 50 cents. You guys out there have to have such a better grasp on what it is you need to live, like what your living wage is and what your value is. And then also, you know, those extrinsic values of what will be outside of your pay that you absolutely need to have. You were talking about this. Is it bringing your dog to work and being able to keep them there?
Yeah.
That's a huge benefit for a lot of people. You know, what is the discount that you're getting? What is it that, you know, you don't have to work weekends or you work split shifts? I don't know, whatever it is. We really have to put value on all of that. And I think we lose sight of that. It takes away from our compassion and satisfaction and our employment satisfaction. And I think that we really need to kind of make sure that narrative is what it should be.
Yeah. Well, years ago, I remember giving my staff total pay compensation sheets. And all they tend to look is like what they have left at the end of their paycheck, but they don't look at, we're paying your unemployment insurance. We're paying your FICA, you know, Social Security, 50% of that. But we're also giving you, of course, at that time we gave 100% free pet care. So free pet care,
right,
your pets, you know, health insurance, you know, 401ks, all those kind of things. And all those things add up. But a lot of times people just look at the dollar amount of what they have. Like I have $500 at the end of the week, but that $500 is great if you are also getting health insurance and 401ks and pet care. But you could be $700 with no insurance, no pet care, and you're in the hole. So you really have to do, it's math, and nobody wants to do the math. People are lazy, I confess, I'm lazy about numbers too. This is why when you go to Kohl's and you shop, they do the math for you and tell you what the discount is, right? So we won't do the math. But yeah, I just think that's really such an important point for all people, is to be able to really know their numbers, what it takes to truly live, what your budget is, you know, where you waste money. That's the other thing that drives me crazy, because I guess my mother trained me this way to pay attention. And I just see so much money wasted when people are going, oh, you know, I make $10 an hour and I can't pay my rent. But then they have 16 tattoos. And I'm like, this doesn't make any sense to me, because you've spent thousands of dollars on tattoos and you can't eat. I mean, there's not logic to this.
Well, so I'll push back on that to you. I have gentle pushback on that, because the thing about it is that you have to live, and you have to live with, you have to be able to live, you have to be able to eat, you have to be able to have a roof over your head, but you also should be able to enjoy your life. So if it's tattoos that fill your cup, you should not have to choose between tattoos and eating, because that's for, there's some mismanagement happening there in some way or another. And I think that, again, having a budget is incredibly important. Knowing what you've got is important. Managing is important, but also knowing that you only make $10 an hour, how can you eat and fill your cup? And maybe that is, unfortunately, where we do miss out, I think, with a lot of individuals, and they don't understand savings and investing and things like that. Because again, I think it's generational, but I think it's unrealistic to say drop the lattes, you know, save that $6 a day that you spend. Because I'm like, no, because if that latte is the only joy that I'm going to get in my day, damn if I don't deserve $6 out of everything I earn all day. More importantly, if I can't afford the minimal things that keep me happy within reason, then I really need to look at where I'm working, what I'm getting. Am I managing myself? Check your house first. But then, you know, you do need to take a look. And I think that's what's happening with technicians now, who are saying what I'm getting is unrealistic. I am not living my dream or my quality life. It's leading to my burnout. It's leading to my dissatisfaction in my day to day. I don't think that people, you know, it's funny. There are studies out there. There's data, and I always have to give the credit to Namvi and Dr. Carrie Journey for a presentation I saw her do that said, like, technicians are happiest around, I want to say, like, $21 or $22 an hour. And a living wage, I think, is like $33 an hour or something, right? Like, that's the average living wage. So it wasn't even like the living wage average, or maybe like that living wage was like 17 and they wanted to make like 21 or 20. I don't know, but it was not an unreasonable amount of money.
Yeah.
And it found that at that amount of money, technicians were fairly happy. They could pay their bills. They could run their life. And I keep saying, and it may be unpopular, but even for the small clinics, if you can't pay a living wage, you need to look at how you're charging or how you're running your business, because running it on the backs of your employees is not fair, especially over your clients.
Yeah. Well, I was shocked because when all this stuff kind of came up, I looked at what I was paying in my practices in 2005 when I quit managing. And I had a licensed technician that was making $20 an hour. And I'm like, you got to be kidding. You got LVTs out here making $12 an hour. Why would they even take that job? I don't understand why anybody would take that job. But, you know, I think the other thing too, and I'd love to hear your thoughts about this, and we are so sidetracked, but I don't think women are good negotiators. And we have so many women in our profession. And I honestly, I have a husband who's been in sales his whole life. And if I wasn't making enough money, he would go, you need to go ask for a raise. It's easier to ask for it than work for it. This is what he's told me all my life. And so I would go and ask. And sure enough, every time I asked, I got more money. But I think a lot of times I see people very resentful of the fact that they're not making more money. And then I will ask them, have you gone to ask? Oh, no, you know, I don't. I think that people are just supposed to give me more money. And I went, you got to understand, I managed for a long time. And I try to pay attention, but there's a lot of stuff going on. And if you will come to me and go, you know, I think I really deserve a raise because I did this, this, and this. And then I'm going to look at that and go, oh, you know what? You're exactly right. I think you're right. I'm going to give you a raise, but you got to give me a reason that you have done more, earned more, you know, better, faster, smarter stuff. Not I existed in your practice like a tree stump and I have earned I've learned nothing. I have done nothing more than the day I walked in. I'm sorry. You are not worth more. So you've got to be proactive for yourself, but you also got to put the effort in.
Yeah. You know, honestly, that's a lot to unpack. And you know, I've got a lot about it, but I think there is an element, I think, of women. But I think there is a difference too, because we are caretakers in this field. I think there's so many statistics and data that could get brought into this, because is it that we are women, or is it that as a whole in this profession, we do lean more toward caretaking and self-care, right? And so, when they've got it or they need it, you know.
Oh, God, Becky, that is exactly it.
They're such nice people, and I know we, and they just bought that expensive piece of equipment, and we justify it because we're family, which is you know, getting to be a real big pet peeve. No, we're not. We work together, we're not family, not even kind of. You don't get my kidney, I don't know what to tell you, right? We're not family. So I think that there is a lot of personality traits that lead to that, but I think we also look at imposter syndrome and how rampant it is in our industry. And then I'm like, are we telling ourselves we aren't necessarily worth it? Or why are we worth it more than somebody else? Because the imposter syndrome is big. But just to seriously build a theme to this whole conversation. If you know what you're worth and you need, it is easier to go and say, hey, my expenses have increased this much since my last raise. I am making this. So when you really like numbers for you as a manager, it's easy to say, oh gosh, yes, you're showing me your expenses have increased. Here's what you've put into the business. Like, yes, this is how we have progressed in 3 years. You're absolutely right. Or when it does come time for your, which again, annual raises, that's a cost of living. But like, if you do go to your employee and say, hey, you know, you've been doing great. We'd like to offer you a raise. You have the right to negotiate that raise. That's not a gift. That's not like I wrapped here's your Christmas present. You're negotiating it. No. This is I see you and you deserve more. And so if you're offered a raise, you can push back at that as well and say, you know, that's fantastic. But, you know, and looking at it in a big picture.
There's also data. You know, I think there's a huge secrecy. We don't tell people how much you make, blah, 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 blah. And I totally get that because if there would be resentment, but I believe in pay scales. I think if you have, you know, come in and you have this skill set, then you get paid this, and you gain this skill set, then you get paid that. And everybody knows how much everybody get pays because it's set. There is a reason that you climb the ladder, right? Because you've learned more stuff and you do more stuff. So there's transparency to it. And it's so easy to go to your manager and say, hey, I gained this skill set. I now run this part of the world. Now I need to go to this level because this is up the pay scale. And
here's where I'm at.
There you go. You know, but
yeah, the pay scales, if you're not running pay scales, if you're working somewhere that talking about how much you make is taboo, high red flags everywhere, because it means that your worth is going to be based on, you know, somebody's mood, somebody's negotiation, X, Y. It is a setup for disaster. It is a setup for resentment. It is a setup for toxicity. Should not be a secret. If your boss tells you it's illegal to talk about your pay, it is not.
Wrong. No,
it's
no,
true.
No.
It is absolutely not. It's illegal to talk about somebody else's pay.
Yeah.
So those are big red flags. And that, what we're talking about right now, like those are the things that I think are getting peeled back more and more. Mm-hmm. I think more and more conversations are happening saying, hey, you have competitive pay, then post it in your ad. Tell me it's competitive. Right. You want my transparency. You want my resume. Mm-hmm. You want my CV. You want me to tell you why I left my last 5 jobs. You tell me why your last 5 employees left then. Uh-huh. Like, if you want this level of transparency from me, then I'm going to need it from you. And I think that's what's really the dialogue that's changing in a really cool way. Where we're going to get better and do better, or you're not going to be on the table anymore. There's too many better options now.
I think
it might be the gas station.
You're right. Gosh, you're absolutely right. It might be the gas station. So Becky, let me ask you this, because we did really kind of get away from our question list, but that's cool.
There's no track with me, right? Like there's merch. No. Yes.
I absolutely will. So thinking about, you know, like your big curveball, what was the scariest part of that for you? And then looking at your career and how it's moved forward, and our screen is kind of frozen here. I don't know if it's you or me, but it may be me. What do you think is your biggest career mistake?
Yeah, that's hard, right? Because I can't remember what it was. I'm getting off track. I'm gonna tell you a story. I was watching a Christmas movie this year, and they were talking about Santa's Book of Mistakes, which, you know, so some of the elves messed up, and they were like really sad because it was gonna put the first mistakes in the book. And when they got with Santa and the hero's journey played out, you know, there were no mistakes. There were no mistakes in that book, because there's no such thing really as mistakes. There's learning opportunity.
Yeah.
And so I like to think that I've had a lot of learning opportunities. If I had to truly say what I would consider a mistake, it would be that I inherited toxic traits from the very beginning, and that I have demonstrated super toxic personality in the clinic. I've made people cry. I've been less than amazing to people, despite being as amazing as I could be to pets. I probably hurt a lot of people making pets better, and that wasn't necessarily the right way to do it. And there's a lot of that in our industry, and it sucks. Mm-hmm. And so I would say my biggest mistake is being toxic. In my own imposter syndrome moments, in my own bad moments. And so you know, luckily I can say, I think I still have toxic traits, but I think I'm a lot more aware of them. I fight them. And I don't pretend they're not there. So I would truly say it's my biggest professional mistakes because, you know, I was lecturing at TVMA and I was talking about, something, I don't know. I think it was compassion satisfaction, but I was saying, you know, I'm some people's worst coworker. Like there are some people out there who probably are like, she was the worst person I ever worked with. And like, that is not a legacy I want to leave. Those are probably my biggest mistakes. And you know who you are. If you're they're not watching because they saw my name and they were like,
oh, we don't want to listen to her.
But they're not watching. But if you're watching, it gets back to you.
Well, Mel Serpenor is a friend of mine. And I met her because she wrote an article about being a bully and how she, you know, realized that she was the toxic person. And I just emailed her and I said, how brave of you to say that, because a lot of times it's so hard for us to look at ourselves, you know, realistically without the rose colored glasses, thinking we're always perfect and go, dang, that was evil. And I, you know, look back on some of the things that I did as a manager and went, man, I'm sorry. I screwed up, you know, but it's a learning experience and you're just doing the best you can. And I think giving people grace is very important. You know, you just go through life and think people are doing the best they can. Everybody, I am, and I think everybody else is too. So why would I think that they are intentionally, you know, trying to harm me? And sometimes it's just, sometimes circumstances are happening that in a crunch time, right? Like something's crashing, you got to get things done. And maybe you barked orders out there and or get their feelings hurt. But then I think that's why personality profiling is so important in clinics, when people understand, oh man, she's a driver personality and she starts barking orders. It's just her communication style. It's okay. She's not really meaning anything. It doesn't mean any harm by it. And it gives us a little grace out in the world.
That grace is important. And I think we forget too that other people are on their growth journey parallel to your growth journey, right? Like I read something one time. I was like, you know, we forget our parents were growing up while they were raising us, right?
Exactly.
So I think we sometimes forget, like, our managers are developing management skills on us. you know what I mean? And we're developing with other people who are developing. And so sometimes you just have to remember that you don't know where somebody is in their growth journey. No. But to your, you know, Mel Serpenor, Cindy Courtney, the jerk researcher.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there are several people out there who have gotten really vulnerable about their conversations about the role that they have played and helped people feel really comfortable saying, hey, I was one of those too. And I think that's important. Yeah. We can stand up with other people, makes us feel a little less alone and vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, it's okay to learn from that. I mean, let's say emotional intelligence is gained over time and we aren't born. We're born at like being 2-year-olds with temper tantrums, but we learn to gain control over our emotions if we gain wisdom. And some people I don't think ever do. Honestly, I think some people just stay at 2 and never get out of that. But most of us learn from experience, especially if we study and we try to learn about ourselves and how our mind works and the things that fear makes us do, is sometimes so, that's what drives us, is fear. Yeah. So many
times. Oh yeah. Yeah. And I think you're right. I think you don't know what you don't have. Right. And so you grow up with this toolbox and you think you're doing it right. And then if you can open up your circle, if you can meet new people. And I think that is really probably the biggest thing I ever did for myself professionally in that whole like curveball and overcoming it situation was I surrounded myself with a lot of new people. I had created a very different new life. And when I got outside of my box, I met a lot of people with different ways of thinking. I met a lot of people who weren't afraid to tell me, like, you know, that's you, that's on you, you know? It was like, what? And a lot of people who helped me grow. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, one of the best things we can do is pick up a book and listen to a podcast and ask people what they're reading and take book recommendations seriously and surround yourself with people who are where you want to be, because you are going to need tools you don't have. And when you start to fill your toolbox, you really get excited. And then you start to find and get excited to look for other things that just improve, and you see, they really work. It's not cheesy. It's not, you know, cliche.
Yeah.
those, you need them. You absolutely need them. And the people are out there doing a lot of hard work researching and giving us the tools that we need to be successful. I mean, they're out there, but you have to really make a conscious effort to go get them.
You do. You gotta get out of your comfort zone too, because some of the stuff you're going to find out, you're going to go, ooh, that's kind of me. I don't really like that. I don't like that.
Yeah. Like I recognize that in a way I don't want to. Mm-hmm. And then you have to figure out what to do with that. Right. And that's why we're all in therapy, because, you know, and that's why, mental health stigmas out there, I'm there to break them down, because truthfully, your therapist is doing the work that you're trying to make your friends and your mom and your coworkers do when you grab coffee and you just are grabbing about your problems in your life. Your therapist will tell you the things that nobody else will. They will break it down in a way you haven't ever had before. But like with that growth process comes the processing of your recognition. Mm-hmm. What do I do with it now? Because developing new behaviors is not an easy thing to do. But man, it's cool. You know, you can teach little dogs new tricks.
You can. Gosh, I think some of the stuff that I've learned over the years, and I've trained so many communication classes for Patterson's. I think we look back on it and figured there's been about 10,000 students that came through that loop.
Promo code the bend.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just starting out learning stuff about neuroscience and then fear-free behavior. And that fear-free stuff can just translate right over to human side, because we're just animals at the top of the food chain. When we understand the way our mind works, the lies it tells us, because we tell ourselves false stories. And our mind doesn't know the truth from a lie. It only knows what we tell it. And so we've got to be always aware and always cautious to listen to our story and go, hold on a minute. You know, I don't think that's right. That's not exactly what's happening here. Let me go ask some questions and find out what's happening. So I think the thing, if we could learn curiosity and just be, avidly curious about everything instead of making these minuscule judgments like off the chart in a second, a flash seconds, because we do. Our brain is very judgy and instantly.
Oh yeah. And it tells us all right. We lie to ourselves on a regular basis. I love that you say that, because I think truthfully preaching therapy, it's the one thing it's taught me is saying like, whose narrative is that? Is that your narrative, or is that what's actually happening?
Yeah. What is the story?
But we act on our narrative, right? And people will say like, perception is truth. And I'm like, not necessarily. Like, how are you perceiving it is an important thing. Okay. It doesn't mean it's not your moment, but perception is not reality.
And all that perception has all that cultural bias whatever you learned as a child, you're bringing that forward into what this reality is today, and or what you think the reality is today.
That's
not true. It's kind of like those all statements. I've often taught in my communication classes. In fact, I taught it last night. We look at people instantly and judge them and go, oh, well, she is a rabies only. She'll never do whatever this is. So we judge people instantly. But we also make those all statements like all women are bad drivers. All gay men can decorate. Like all black people have rhythm. These are all stupid. They're really stupid if we sit there and look at it, but we don't look at it because our brain likes instantly to figure things out.
To categorize it, right? Yeah. Yes. To make it familiar and categorize. And I think you're right. Extremes. Anytime we're talking in extremes or thinking in extremes, you always this, we never that. You're absolutely right. We're getting in really blinded thinking and we're missing an opportunity. And I think it takes a lot of just self-awareness and self-practice and being able to be, it goes back to kind of what you said about giving people grace, but to be able to give ourselves grace. We live in a very perfectionist profession where people have really good intentions and best intentions. And so therefore, when they don't pan out or somebody doesn't maybe receive them the same way, there can be like it's defensiveness and challenge instead of like, okay, where did this go wrong? Expectations and conversations like that. And so I think we have so much of that in our own personal industry. And I think, again, it goes back to personality types and stuff. So, for all of us in the industry, I think it's really important to take a step back and like you were saying, to look at your personality test. That stuff is not cliche. It's not silly. And understanding the people that you work with is so meaningful, instead of wondering why they are some kind of way. Why does she do this? Why is she like this? What is this? If you catch yourself with like the who, what, when, where, and why thing, then figure out how to get to that answer. Instead of, again, making your own narrative. Well, she's like this because she's lazy, or she's like this because she doesn't care. Whatever that narrative you create is. And I think it's a great opportunity for managers. I'm sure you have tons that listen because it's like your jam, right? But I mean, like for managers, when you see that and that's the dialogue, or, you know, you're dealing with conflict and they're like, well, why does she like that? Or why does she do that? Or what's that? You know, then you have a group that doesn't know. They don't know each other that way. And you might not know them that way, but boy, if you can really map out your colors.
Yeah. I had a conversation one day, actually it was at one of Andy Rourke's conferences, and somebody was teaching this class about culture. And I said, I think I taught you the DISC stuff, the personality stuff at your hospital. He said, you did 8 years ago. He said, and it's the best thing we ever did in our practice. And to this day we use it. Because somebody will say something and she'll go, okay, remember I'm a driver. And everybody goes, yeah, we know. And so they kind of give each other that grace and they make a joke out of it rather than getting offended by the way somebody communicates. And I think it's, for me, it's been so enlightening. I tell people I've learned a lot in continuing education, but I learned that in 1987, and it was a class called How to Deal with Difficult People. I still had the little pamphlet that came with it. It was one of those career development things that comes in the mail. And I went to that and I went, this illuminates everything for me, because I was working in the same office with a boss that was a 10 on the driver's
seat. Okay, sure.
Yeah. And so knowing how to handle him and collaborate with him made all the difference in the world. And we never had a problem. I did throw a pin at him once because he was being a horse's ass, but he knew he was. So he...
It's never okay.
Yeah, it worked out. It worked out.
You know, I think that's it, though. What you're demonstrating is meeting people where they are. And I think we have a natural tendency to just continually stomp our feet where we are and demand that people get to us. Like, I want you to act or be or do, and, you know, fall into this, because this is, again, what I'm comfortable. This is where my bias is. Finding ways to meet people where they are based on who they are, what they're capable of, what tools they have. You're just going to be working so much smarter and not harder. And I think oftentimes it takes away that personal feel where you're just like, what is wrong with them? Like, well, there's nothing wrong with them. They're just, you can't make a goldfish climb a tree. Like it just doesn't work.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. Well, you know, in working with clients the same way, if you're going to present stuff to a client in an exam room, if you understand their personality style and what they need from you, because you've paid attention to their cues, then you can give them that. And you're not trying to put a square peg in a round hole. It's just, you know, it just works so much better when you're paying attention and you're observant with people, rather than trying to make them do what you want them to do. Let's try to fit what I want to do in what they want, right? And make it for them, because people are
absolutely
self-centered.
You know, it's like my big fat Greek wedding. Like she said, you know, if you're the neck, you can make the head turn wherever you want it to go. You know, you always want to be the neck. You don't need to be the head.
I like that. You want to be the neck. So Becky, I want to talk about the thing you're most proud of in your career.
I mean, I have a lot that I'm proud of. It's really hard probably to narrow down. You know, I know we're going to talk about the industry giving tree, and it's really one of them. And it is, but I have to say, I think what I'm the most proud of are my students. Like, I'm a program director for the first time back into teaching and developing, we'll have students soon. But like, when I look at my graduates from the past out there doing their jam, so professionally, what I'm the most proud of. And then, you know, they'll come back to me with things that they remembered that I taught them, or even they'll just come back to me and ask me questions and, you know, like still respect my opinion.
Yeah.
Or they'll show up even more flattering to a CE. I figure if they show up to a CE, if they got their 2 years of school with me and didn't hear my mouth enough that they're going to come listen to even more of it, then I've got to be doing something kind of right.
Yeah, love it.
But I think I'm the most proud of them because, you know, I can only touch so many things personally, but when you, like, I know it's so cheesy, I go back to education, I guess, but like when you educate others and you, and not just educate them, but you create, you put enthusiasm and excitement, you know, even through like BI, I'll have people come and say, you know, you really reinvigorated this thing I needed, or if I'm lecturing somewhere, I think that's it, because it's like, I can give you something maybe you can't give yourself right then. Right. And I think that's probably what I'm the most proud of.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm
because it makes a difference every day, hopefully.
Yeah. I love educating people. And I look back at my career as the manager, and there are 9 veterinarians who are now practice owners running hospitals and running good hospitals, kind of the way I raised them. And yeah. I just think it's so gratifying. And every now and then somebody will come up to me and go, hey, you know, how are you? You know, I'm actually, my mother, it goes to one of my vets that I was running practice. But we hired those kids when they were students in school. I mean, they were not veterinarians. They were just high school kids and stuff. And they had goals and they learned to run a practice well, but also and learn how to respect their team members and encourage growth in the practice and, you know, have a culture of collaboration. And then they take it out into the world and they do it, you know, for others. So that is my jam too. I totally get it when you're talking about that.
It's meaningful.
Yeah. But let's talk a little bit about, that's kind of your legacy, right? Those people will go on and they'll be your legacy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Talk about the giving tree and what was the inspiration for that? Cause I was with you really early in that. I think I was like number 5 on the list, but
you're so great. I know. So the giving tree, the problem with me is I am a leap before I look kind of gal, but it all came from a video. You can go to our website, veterinaryindustrygivingtree.com. And there was a video that showed these kids in like a boys and girls club type environment. And they were given the opportunity to get a gift for themselves or a gift for their family member. It was like dream, like top 3 live. Like, what is a gift your mom always wanted? You know, it could be like, and like, I'm sure other kids did not pick their parents, but the ones in this clip, you know, they all chose to give a gift to somebody else. And they chose it again. It was like, well, family's more important, or like my parents give to me all the time and do stuff for me all the time. And like, I could give this as a way I could give back, you know? You know, to be really personal, the day I left my first husband, I literally had nowhere to go. I drove to school because I didn't know where else to go. I knew I had to be at a school in the morning, and I slept in my car and just cried. And it was like the worst night. And I've had a few other really rock bottom moments like that. And it just makes me think about how far I have come and how lucky I am, you know? And like last year in the middle of this pandemic, I feel like busier than ever. My husband getting paid to be on call, basically. So not even really having to go to work. I helped create a online veterinary conference. Like, I felt like I was thriving in this time where other people were like not. And it was like, I don't feel guilty about it, but I want to like pay that forward and give it back in some kind of way. And like, these kids are so inspiring in like the selflessness that goes with it's so natural because a kid goes one way or another, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and just this beautiful, like, they don't know what a TV really costs, or like, you know, they're versus their dream Barbie dollhouse or whatever, you know? And I was just really moved. So I made a comment, this makes me want to go like buy all the kids or do something. And like, then 2 people, Crystal Vergara and Lily Preston, who is a former student of mine, made the mistake of encouraging it. And then it was just like off to the races where I was like, well, you know, I know a lot of my own profession doesn't have help. And like, I grew up an angel tree kid, you know, like my mom was in school, my name was on a tree. It was always about the kids and the presents. And I was like, how can we do this where obviously I can't ship presents around the world and I can't, how do we make this an online thing? How do we make this a one centralized location that can actually help people? And you know, it ultimately raised over $7,000, and we helped 38 families our first year, and just about the same this second year, including becoming a 501c3, starting an Amazon Smile, and, you know, really gearing up to be able to continue to do so at the holiday season. Just like a little bit of help can seem to be like everything, you know, sometimes. And these people we help are so grateful and so in need, you know, it's coolest thing ever.
Yeah, it really is cool. I love seeing the stories and like the people who donate. And I love the fact, well, and you know this, so somebody asked for help for their practice and they wanted a consultant. And so I volunteered 5 hours.
Yeah, that I need to give you credit for that, right? Like, so because you were the first person I thought of, and I was like, what is it? can you help? Because that was it. It was like my doctor has an awesome culture. It was so meaningful, I think, to both of us, because it was like they love him and they want to help him. And how often do you hear such a different story? Like our culture is crap.
Exactly. It was like the kids given to their parents. It was the same principle there as they were given to their boss. And I thought, what a great thing. I'm sure I'm glad to help. I still haven't heard from him, by the way, but yeah, I'm still kind of waiting to see what happens with that. But I thought that spoke volumes as to what kind of person he was and probably why his business is, you know, needs some help, because he's probably such a really nice guy. He's probably one of those, you know, just giving away everything. But I just thought that was so wonderful that one of the staff members said, I don't want anything for myself, but I really want something for my practice because it will help everybody. And I'm like, well, that's so awesome. I love it.
I mean, and the people that see each other, like sometimes it's just being seen, right? I mean, there's some people who are in really obvious struggle out there. But there's also just some people who it was just like, they just work so hard and they don't ask for help. They're always willing to step up to help. Feeling seen is so meaningful. Mm-hmm. Just being like, wow, that's, you know, we aren't able to send life-changing amounts of money, but I mean, like in our first year, we had somebody post on the page, like I had $11 for groceries this week before this came, and they had like $150 worth of food in their basket or something from the food, you know, money we had sent. And I thought to myself, like, I have literally spent $150 on lunch, you know, like I have had enough drinks with my husband and, you know, we're down here at the coast, things are fancy and expensive. And I've spent that kind of money and what somebody has allotted for a week for groceries in a meal. And so I'm so lucky for that. Like, I'm so lucky. I do what I love. I work with people I love. I get to like talk to amazing people. Like, I don't even know how this is my life at most days. I have an amazing husband. I have amazing pets. Like, I truly have never been, I live a life I never thought I would have. Like, if you looked at the girl sitting in her car at tech school, by the way, I just want to say, because we are on a veterinary podcast, it happened to be cow palpation lab day the next day. And so I said, you know, the good news is you can't think about anything else when you're shoulder deep. Like it was if anything was to take my mind off of my life, it was cow palpation lab day. If you had told that girl, like, don't worry, in 15 years, you're not even going to recognize your own life. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be so happy and so mm-hmm. proud. Whatever I could do, because, you know, I had people show me a lot of kindness. I had people help me out financially and in so many other ways, you know, like I have had so many hands lift me up in various moments of my professional career that like the idea of being able to just write a check and to coordinate a thing where people can give. And I want to say too, like you, so many people were just grateful for the opportunity to give. They were like, thank you for doing this so I can give to my own profession, so I can give back to other people. It wasn't pulling teeth to get money or help. You know what I mean? People were ready. And that, it was beyond moving.
Yeah. Well, I think we're naturally a generous profession. If you look at the big hearts and the many martyrs that we have that work in our group. I was excited about it. I think this is so wonderful because there were people out there who just, sometimes you just look at people and go, man, life has smacked you down, right? I mean, they really have. And through no fault of their own or anything that they could control, life just happens. And those are the kind of people that you are happy to reach out to and just say, yeah, here, what can I do to help you out? Here's something, you know, something is better than nothing. And the fact that you were doing around Christmas, I think was awesome. And now you're like official. So this is even better. It's become official. So thank you. We were talking about.
I'm so proud of it.
Yeah. I mean, you should be, you absolutely should be. And you won an award for, starting this, right? What was the award that you won?
The Bridge Club did these Bright Mind Awards. Yes. And so we were the recipient of the Game Changer Award. And it was really a huge honor. We were the first recipients, the tree was. And I mean, it was so meaningful. And honestly, just having the opportunity to bring to light the tree and what we do was, I can't ask for more than that.
I think that now that so many more people know about it, probably this Christmas, it's going to blow up. I think it's going to be major. So yeah, I'm excited to see where it goes.
I sure hope so. You can give to the tree all year long. So we do have a PayPal, so you can give all year long. We also have the Amazon Smile, which it's funny to me how many people don't know about Amazon Smile. So if you do shop on Amazon, you can just search Amazon Smile and it can link your account to the charity of your choice. The Giving Tree is on there, but so is everything that means anything to you. So if it isn't the Giving Tree and perhaps it's breast cancer or Alzheimer's or Lou Gehrig's or
sea turtles,
good, because
I give mine,
kids.
I give mine to the sea turtles.
Yeah, sea turtles.
Yeah. There's the lady in Wilmington.
So there is something for everybody.
That's what I give my stuff to sea turtles. So Becky, let's talk about
the Karen Beasley Rescue. Yes. The Karen Beasley Sea Turtle Rescue.
That's where my Amazon Smile stuff goes, because I'm an ocean girl and I want to do what I can to maintain our oceans and our seas. So yeah, recycle your plastic.
Well deserved. She's an amazing woman. And yes.
And take care of the turtles. Take care of the sea life. All life comes from the sea. And if we keep screwing it up, we're all going to die. So there's my speech for the sea. let's talk about books, because we talked a little bit earlier about the things like education. What is your, like, this is the book that everybody should read kind of book?
Everything that Brené Brown has ever written ever.
She is. Oh yeah, absolutely.
In fact, I'm blurred. But so if I unblur my background, and it's funny how many people will notice it during meetings. Daring Greatly is the first text on my shelf right over behind me. So oftentimes I'll be in meetings and people will be like, I see Daring Greatly behind your shoulder. One, because they recognize the title because they read it. I think Daring Greatly is probably one of the best books that I think she's ever written. She also does have a book about leadership. That's one of her more recent. It's a fairly short read. And I think for anybody who's in leadership in any kind of management, honestly, anybody who's in, like, if you breathe air, you should read it. But her leadership book is great, because I think a lot of times, especially in our industry, we end up as leaders with no education and no resources and nothing. And it's just like, I myself experienced being in management and being told, like, we like what you're doing, but not really how you're doing it. And that's all I was given. And it was really awful. So, but for me, Brené Brown, and if I had to pick one, it would be Daring Greatly, because I just think it's really opens the door to resiliency and vulnerability management within yourself and understanding. And I think if you understand vulnerability and resiliency, your whole world changes.
Yeah. I absolutely adore Brené Brown. I listened to her TED Talk probably 5 times. Just the first time I heard it, I just repeat it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
For Christmas, I got, somebody gave me Atlas of the Heart, which is her new book. And it's pretty good, but it's not. And I listened to her podcast, Dear Lead. Yeah. And I can't think of the other one. Anyway, it's gone off my head. But yeah, I mean, I just do think her work is so brilliant. And honestly, I have to say the best compliment I ever got as a speaker was, and it's happened 3 times now, is somebody came up and said, oh my God, you remind me of Brené Brown. And I'm like, oh. And I think it's the Southern accent, honestly, but and the stuff I talk about, but really, I mean, she is awesome. I mean, and her research and stuff is just amazing. And it's so illuminating. When you read it and you go, oh yeah, this is the way life works. And she has got it nailed along.
It's a beautiful, I think when you think about educators and people, you know, you can listen to a speaker who's really smart. You can listen to a speaker who's really entertaining, but they're not always both. Right. And so she does brilliant research and she delivers it in a very consumable way, in which there is a level of entertainment, but there's that level of consumability that you can digest it, that you can find yourself in it without feeling offended and turned off, and you can apply it. right? I know a lot of management tools, it's like, oh, okay, but now what do I do with this?
Right.
And I just think, honestly, like I gave my stepdaughter when she was like 18, the collection, because I was like, if I had these when I was 18, my life would have been, I'm sure she didn't read them and I'm sure she'll read them one day and wish she did. But when she was like 18, I was just like, man, if I had these when I was your age, my life would have been so different. So please, you know, take these and read them. So yeah, that's it for me with books for sure. And then anything Harry Potter series. Yeah.
I love Harry Potter. The when I was in college, my freshman year orientation, they had you read How to Win Friends and Influence People, which of course I did not do. And I look back on it because I did read it years later and I went, crap, I wish I had read that book because it is brilliant. And
that was written with like 1932 or something like that. And the fundamentals are the same today.
Yeah, still pertinent. And you know, some of the Dale Carnegie books and things like that, you just go, wow, these are universal truths. And it's kind of like the DISC personality profile stuff. That stuff goes back. You can go and find documentation of it from 444 BC. So there are truths that are always going to be truths, you know, as far as human nature goes. And once we learn those things, it makes your life so much easier once you know.
It's the world's primary colors, right? Yeah, exactly. I mean, they just are what they are, and they are true guiding posts. Mm-hmm. I think for working with people and managing people and opening up your ability to see again people where they are and to work with them. And you know, there's always the joke, like I work with animals because I don't like people, and then they're like, well, all animals come with people, and you know, like whatever. But like, it doesn't matter. This has everything to do with your relationships with your family, your relationships with your significant other's family, because you have to get along with people you don't know how to get along with in life. Your neighbors, when you buy a house and don't know them, like everything you do in life is going to involve people and social interactions. And and in this day and age of video cameras and documenting, it's easier to just be able to be successful in your interactions with people.
Exactly right. Really, your bad behavior is going to be blasted everywhere out on the internet if you are not.
I am so glad I did not go through my worst years in the age of cameras.
It's true. It is so true. I think I tell a story, and I've told it before on the podcast, but when I was 29, I was a new manager in the hospital, and this client came in. She wasn't a great client. It was like one of those rabies only, except it was flea injection. You know, it was steroids every month for the dog's fleas. And she'd been there like five times maybe. And she was fussing because my doctors said every other month, we're going to do a physical exam because like steroids, right? So, and this is the 80s, so we didn't have monthly flea preventative. It was Adams flea spray and Cyphotrol. So she comes in and she's fussing about the $20. And I go through the whole spiel and I explain to her about, you know, the doctors actually do a physical exam because it could be dangerous because it's steroids. I don't care. I don't want to play blah, 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 blah. And I looked at her and I looked at that record and I went and I walked over to the copier and I copied her little one page green sheet and I slid it across the counter to her. And I said, lady, I won't kill your dog for $20. And if you want to, you need to go somewhere else. And this is me, the communication coach, right?
Somewhere you were communicating.
I did. Clearly. I communicated her right out the door. And then I went back and told my boss.
Did she leave?
She needed to leave. I went back and told my boss what I did. And he went, you know what? If you can't handle her, nobody did. So fine. I went, good, because she's gone. But sometimes you just have to stand up for what you believe. But it really, in today's day, you know, I would have had a nasty Google review or something out there.
That's right. That's the thing. That's it. You would have the nasty Googles and the Yelps and the... Mm-hmm. You know, and it's not good since we already push ourselves for perfection. No. But I do know that resiliency is a major theme that is a great one to embrace and to become comfortable with, because
Mark Manson's book, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F, right? So sometimes you just have to say that. And I was with a practice owner and we were doing strategic planning last week. And I went, Rebecca, you got to quit caring so much about what other people think about you. You do you and you do it right. And you be proud of what you do. And if somebody doesn't like it, well, you know, basically F them. I just go on. And I know it's hard to do, It is hard to do, but sometimes you got to get a little cocky attitude. And
if you're doing the right thing,
if you're doing the right thing,
it's not always going to be easy and it's not always going to be fun and it's not always going to be popular. And cliches are cliches for a reason, right? Mm-hmm. They become cliches for a reason, but it's really the hard part about management, right?
Yeah.
Is you end up in that really hard position between your employees and your bosses and the, you know, customers. And it's not a place to want to feel popular or to need to be liked. But I also think that if you don't feel popular or liked, then you need to be looking at transparency and communication, because if you're transparent about things that people don't like, they can at least usually
they'll learn to deal. Yeah. Well, I've always told managers this. So one of the things that I think is incredibly important that you do as a manager is tell people what you're doing behind the door, because they just go back there and think you're playing video games, right? There's this big mystery when you're shutting the door. They don't know you've run 500 pages of reports and trying to figure out, you know, who's stealing what or what your payroll, why your payroll is off, or, you know, what best piece of equipment to buy, because there's so many little details like that. And I know there was many nights we closed at 6. I was there till 10 o'clock at night, just doing stuff that required 100% of my attention without anybody coming in and asking me a question. But you tell
there's
people
no such
what
thing.
You're doing. And because, I mean, when I looked at my staff and they said, I wouldn't have your job for anything. And I said, but I love my job. Why wouldn't you want it? And no, I never want to do what you do. And I thought, okay, they really appreciate the work then, because they know enough about what I'm doing to say, I don't want it.
It's not for them. Yeah, absolutely.
At least
they know enough. It's important.
Yeah, it is important. It is important that people are transparent with their work. And, you know, I think that getting your team involved in initiatives and problem solving, because it is a team effort. And if you hire smart people and don't use their brains, then shame on you. You're the fool.
Sure. And I mean, empowerment and utilization are huge aspects of job satisfaction. And so if you don't feel empowered and if you don't feel like you're making a difference and you don't feel like, you know, I'm just a warm body.
Mm-hmm.
Very few people have so little motivation in life that they're satisfied with being a sack of air.
Yeah.
And so it's really important for people to feel empowered and to be used to and to feel challenged. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's in our human nature. But everybody's different. I think it's important too that we look at what does make other people feel that way. I think we often forget what we feel does not necessarily mean that that's how they feel or feel empowered by or feel motivated by. And I think that all just comes down to that educating and learning and growing within management. It's a verb, right? It's not a noun. So it's something you do and it's something you have to learn how to do.
Yeah. And it's a constant. You're constantly learning and growing and paying attention and active listening and asking the right questions. And it's so important to not accuse people, right? Just ask, because you don't know until you ask. And it's the same thing with clients. You don't know until you ask. And let's pay attention and let's listen a lot more than we talk.
Everybody in life, let's listen more than we talk. Yeah. Ironically, with us both talking on a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, I know we're about out of time and I know your schedule is busy and I don't want to keep you longer than I promised, but have you got any final words of wisdom for anybody listening out there? Anybody you'd like to give a shout out to, a mentor, somebody who was there for you and it really gave you that leg up?
You know, I don't because there's so many that you feel like you leave the really important people out. But you know, the truest thing I think I can say is just like, if you're listening to this, thank you for listening to this, because there are people who show up and they clock in and they do their job and they clock out, and that's okay, right? You don't have to work to live or live to work. Neither one is right or wrong. But if you're here and you're listening and you're trying to do better, or you're just trying to find a place to relate or like trying to grow, you know, I think that's where the hard work comes in. That's to me what's worth the recognition. That's what makes you part of my profession, not just like somebody who works in a vet. It makes you part of the profession. And we're busy and we're tired and we're still all striving to do so much better. And so just thanks for taking the time, and thank you, Miss Debbie, for taking the time to have me, but like to put all this together and to make sure these conversations get out there so that people where they feel related to. And I think this is one of those places out there that people need.
Well, I will say that right back at you, because I enjoy your and Ernie's podcast. You do a lot of thought-provoking things that I think are maybe making people pay attention to some of the issues in our profession. And we're the problem solvers. We like to solve those problems. As long as we keep working and other people like us keep working on it, I think we can make this profession as wonderful as it's been for us, because I cannot imagine doing anything else in my whole life. And I've been doing it for 35 years, and I'll keep doing it probably till the day I die, because I love it so much. And I feel so bad that there are people out there who are suffering who don't love it because of lack of knowledge. More than anything else, it's just lack of knowledge, because I don't think anybody intends to be harmful. I just think they just don't understand how not to be. Maybe
that's right. That's right. And so the time you take to put the tools out there it's so important. And I'm just honored to be a part of it. And to thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Well, thank you for being on, and we will have all your information if people want to get in contact with you and want to listen to your podcast. We'll have all that in the show notes. So thank you so very much for taking your time today. And I really enjoyed our conversation, even though it didn't go exactly on track, but it's all good, because that makes
sense. That's a conversation with Becky any day.
And Debbie too. Believe me. Squirrel. That's how I roll. All right, Becky. Thanks so much. Have a great rest of your day.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.